Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's part two of our discussion with Dr. Theoharis Theoharides. He's an MD, PhD, and Director of Molecular Immunopharmacology and Drug Delivery at Tufts University School of Medicine, and has some very exciting insights about the potential causation of autism and other medical conditions that we'll get into in relationship to mast cell activation syndrome. We'll listen to part one to get some background on what's happening there. But so let's assume, Dr. Theoharides, that we've got brain on fire. We have an inflammatory condition that may be due to a breakdown in the blood-brain barrier, the influx of toxins and allergens that ordinarily are kept away from the brain by an intact blood-brain barrier, perhaps even with the influence of heavy metals, other autoantigens in the body. And medical solutions may offer only partial or incomplete relief. And that's why, even though you're conventionally oriented, you seem to have turned towards an examination of nutraceuticals as a way of tamping down this inflammation. So luteolin, what is it?
Great introduction. I appreciate it. I will return in a second to the inflammation of the brain. But let me first say that luteolin belongs to a very large class of naturally occurring molecules. The largest class is called actual anthocyanidins. Antho in the Greek means flower, cyanide means color. So basically these molecules give color to plants, flowers, etc. The subcategory of that is called polyphenols. And we can talk about what phenols mean. It is the structure of the particular molecules that, for those that might recognize a structure, they have a lot of what we call hydroxyl groups bound to what we call a benzene ring. But within that, there is another subgroup that are called flavonoids. So luteolin belongs to the class of or subclass of flavonoids. There are about 3,000 flavonoids in nature. So not all of them are well characterized, not all of them are necessarily helpful. And sometimes we unfortunately see at various markets supplements sold that say citrus flavonoids, isoflavonoids, soy flavonoids. These are all mixtures, and most of the time we have no idea what the mixture contains and what the outcome might be. In fact, with isoflavonoids, we worry sometimes because those have estrogenic activity, mm-hmm. and I would never give them in a patient, God forbid, that might have, let's say, breast cancer or mm-hmm. ovarian cancer. So there are certain things that we should actually remember. The second major point I would like to make is that unfortunately, in the United States, as in many other countries, the dietary supplements are not regulated, which means that there's no most of the time indication of what the source is and what the purity is. And I will explain why this is important. The cheapest source of one of the most popular flavonoids called quercetin that you mentioned earlier is actually peanut shells. But no one is telling you that it's from peanut shells.
Right.
And these molecules, most of the time, are no more than 50% pure. So if someone has peanut allergy, you're doomed. I'll give you another example. The second cheapest source is fava beans. Some of mm-hmm. you might know the fava beans are like right. green, sort of small beans that are kind of like a half moon. But about 20% of people with Mediterranean origin.
They have a
like
G6PD
myself,
deficiency.
Right. They lack an enzyme. If you mm-hmm. lack the enzyme, you get what we call hemolytic anemia. And before you know it, you will start tracing, you know, up the wrong path, if you wish, why all of a sudden you have anemia, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. So it's very important, especially with people that have complicated diseases, for anybody, if you wish, to try to find sources where at least you know the purity and the source. They might not be 100% pure, but at least you can avoid it if you know what you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, we studied over 50 different flavonoids, And in fact, in 2000, we wrote a review in a journal called Pharmacological Reviews, published by the American Society of Pharmacology and Experimental Therapeutics, on flavonoids, that itself became a classic because it received about 20,000 citations, just that review alone. And in that review, it was obvious because many flavonoids have many different actions. So they, depending on their structure, are very strong antioxidants. And by the way, whenever we have inflammation, we have what we call oxidative stress as well. Mm-hmm. Some are very potent anti-inflammatory, some are neuroprotective, et cetera, et cetera. So in studying them, and I will tell you how we studied them, we were trying to find out which might be, number one, the best anti-inflammatory, and number two, those that, because of their structure, were more likely to get, especially into the brain, in the case of either autism or multiple sclerosis or, you know, even Alzheimer's. Because the more phenolic the flavonoids are, you know, with the more hydroxy groups they have, they're less likely to penetrate cells and get into the brain. So we wanted a molecule that was strongly anti-inflammatory, hopefully blocking mast cells as well, but that would have the least or the fewer number of phenolic compounds that might get into the brain.
It had to do both, because there are perhaps some things that would work great for joint arthritis, but might not penetrate to the brain, right?
Absolutely. So what we do is we have an assay in the laboratory. For the last few years, we were studying only what might block the mast cells. So we take umbilical cord from normal, uncomplicated deliveries from our colleagues in obstetrics, and we isolate the precursor mast cells. We put them in the nice culture medium. In about 10 weeks, we have normal-looking mast cells, and they sort of behave like the mast cells that we would know in the skin or otherwise. So we trigger these cells with different triggers, with at least 5 different triggers, and then we pre-treat the cultured cells with whatever we think is likely to inhibit, in this case, let's say the flavonoids, and then we measure the output. So the output could be histamine, interleukin-6, TNF, or whatever else, you know, we would like to study that the mast cells make, focusing, of course, on those molecules, depending on the diseases, that have already been published to have been associated with the disease. In the case of autism, it would be interleukin-6, tumor necrosis factor, and a few others. So,
and by the way, just parenthetically, and I don't want to take you off subject, these same cytokines have been implicated in other conditions like chronic fatigue syndrome, correct?
Yes, you're absolutely correct. And that brings me to what I would have started this segment with before talking about luteolin and flavonoids. We are very careful in indicating, both in your kind program as well as in publications, that in the case of autism, we're talking about localized or focal inflammation. Why? Because in multiple sclerosis, we also have inflammation in the brain, but there, what is being destroyed is the sheath that covers the long processes from the neurons. We call it myelin. And whenever the myelin is destroyed, you basically have loss of conductivity, and you, all of a sudden, you cannot move, you cannot speak, et cetera, et cetera. But patients with multiple sclerosis do not have behavioral problems. In contradistinction, patients on the autism spectrum have behavioral and communication problems, but they move fine.
Right, no motor problems.
So why is there a difference? So what made it very exciting to us is that that part of the brain that regulates emotions, that is called by Greek terms thalamus, hypothalamus, and amygdala, it is the only part of the brain that has as many mast cells as our skin. The brain doesn't get allergic reactions.
Wow, okay.
So therefore, it was other type of triggers that were triggering the mast cells that cover the blood-brain barrier in that critical area of the brain. And therefore, interleukin-6 or TNF or some other cytokines are obviously involved in a very localized area, while in chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia, where we've also published, might be more accessible in the blood because they affect either the skin or the muscles, etc. So it's very tricky because this focal inflammation in the brain cannot be visualized either by CAT scan or MRI or functional MRI, unfortunately, as of yet.
So it's hard to pin down.
So, going back now to the what happens, so that I can tell you about the second essay we use, we believe strongly that the mast cells fire and they open up the blood-brain barrier. In fact, they open up the gut-blood barrier as well, which is very similar.
So-called leaky gut syndrome, right? Intestinal permeability.
Right. The toxins from the gut now will get into the brain. And patients who are allergic and have allergic rhinitis, it's very important to remember that the nose communicates with the brain directly through the path through which the olfactory nerve goes through. That's why if we ever get sinusitis on the three sinuses we have on our forehead and our cheeks, we call it a death triangle because we can also get meningitis because there's the direct communication. And for those who don't know, this critical part that regulates behavior, thalamus, hypothalamus, and amygdala, if you can imagine, is right behind your nose, in your brain, but right behind your nose. So if the blood-brain barrier opens up there, then toxins or environmental triggers will go directly through your nose into that particular area and will affect basically behavior. Now, we were not, however, convinced that the mast cell is the final agent of inducing inflammation. Surely, it releases inflammatory molecules, it regulates the permeability of the blood-brain barrier. But our brain contains many other cell types, but the most populous, if you wish, cell in the brain is called microglia. We have almost 10 times more microglia than we have neurons. And we used to think that those were just scaffolding onto which the brain makes its various connections.
But aren't they related to macrophages? They sort of are the cleanup crew for the brain.
Absolutely correct. It's a type of macrophage, and it is the only army the brain has to defend itself. So imagine now that in an allergic individual or in another individual with a mast cell got triggered, it opens up the gut blood barrier, the blood-brain barrier, all kind of toxins from the gut and the environment go in. They mast cells release their own inflammatory molecules. What happens? The microglia say, what on earth is going on here? I've got to defend myself. And they do two things. They start multiplying like crazy, and they become like weed choking off the flowers. So we do not destroy neurons. We basically tangle the connectivity. So the connections are not right anymore because you've got all these microglia now throwing their own tentacles all over the place. And the microglia themselves release inflammatory molecules. So it is the microglia that eventually, we believe, do the final local inflammation. So what do? We take microglia from adult brain. It's harder to find it from children. We grow them in culture, in the laboratory, and we do exactly the same thing that I told you about mast cells. So we trigger the microglia, and then we try to inhibit the release of various inflammatory molecules from the microglia, as well as their proliferation. And in both cases, both with the mast cells and with the microglia, we found out that the flavonoid called luteolin could block all these processes, at least in the laboratory. And therefore, we had a molecule that it almost was no-brainer that it should be used because it's not known to have any side effects. It's been used for other conditions that we may or may not have time to talk about. And we made the effort to create a few supplements that might contain luteolin from sources that are not likely to cause allergies. So we have used the tea chamomile or the plant safora or the flower chrysanthemum to get the luteolin from. The luteolin is 98%+ pure, independently assayed by two laboratories. One is called Atlas Laboratory and the other is called Eurofin in California. And only after they've been actually identified to be of that source of purity, they're put together actually in a supplement. Let me stop there and then
sure.
You can ask me and I'll take it from there.
Yeah, so your group has formulated a supplement called NeuroProtec, and let's spell it because it's not P-R-O-T-E-C-T, it's P-R-O-T-K, Neuro, P-R-O-T-E-K, which is the main constituent is luteolin, but it's a combo supplement. So tell us how you arrived at that combination.
Sure. So first of all, I need to go on record. This is not a drug, and it does not treat autism.
Mm-hmm.
What it does is it reduces inflammation that may be involved in the pathogenesis of either autism or some other diseases. So I don't want to be misconstrued there.
Sure.
Because we're on record. So this is not a drug, and there's no claim for treating any particular disease.
Okay.
Having said that, what we had to deal with is the following. Number one, if you give powder flavonoid, whether it's luteolin or quercetin or any other powder, less than 10% is absorbed from the gut. So we had to increase the absorption, and I'll tell you what we did. Second problem is that all of these molecules are broken down by bacteria in the gut, as well as by our own liver, whose job is to actually detoxify, so to speak. So if 10% or less is absorbed, and most of it is broken down in the gut and the liver, then the chances of getting anything in the right place is like minuscule.
Mm-hmm.
So what we first did is we mixed the luteolin with the various oils. So anything that has fewer hydroxyl groups or fewer phenolic groups is more likely to go into oil than not. So after trying various oils, we ended up with olive oil, and I'll tell you why we went a step farther. But if you take any powder and you mix it up with any oil and you shake it up, part of the oil becomes little spheres. We call those phospholipid vesicles or liposomes. And in the process of their forming, they trap some of the powder inside.
Mm-hmm.
Our gut has the ability to absorb lipid much better than water.
This is sometimes referred to as
absorption about five times.
It's sometimes referred to as nanosphere technology or.
Correct. Yeah, that is
it's
correct.
Like a little tiny.
There's no company as of yet to make nanospheres which would have been even better, but that's the closest we can get.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And after you take the olive oil, you're left basically with the pit and the skin. If you crush that, you get what is called the olive pit oil or olive seed oil. Sometimes you could call it a kernel oil. That is a little thicker than the olive oil. In Mediterranean countries, you buy it and you use it for a salad dressing because it's 10 times cheaper. And we wanted to keep the cost as affordable as possible, so we used basically olive kernel oil. In France, they call it olive fruit oil.
Mm-hmm.
Be it as it is the same. Of course, that is important from Greece, and it has to have at least two characteristics, so it's not just collecting the olive fruit oil. It has to have very little water, because otherwise the capsule gets very soft and falls apart, and it has to be collected very quickly, because if you leave the olive seed oil or the olive oil, it gets oxidized, and then, it can bother your stomach, when you take it in a salad or anywhere
mm-hmm.
else.
It's rancid, yeah.
Anyhow, rancid,
yeah.
Exactly. I was looking for the right term. Thank
yeah.
you. The second problem was, how do we actually prevent the luteolin from being destroyed? So what we decided to do, after various ratios or combinations, is to add quercetin. Quercetin, if you can imagine, is luteolin with one more hydroxyl group. It is that similar. But the more hydroxyl groups you have, the more likely that the liver will actually chew you up. So in a way, we're using the quercetin as a decoy to keep the liver enzymes busy to allow luteolin to escape.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the second molecule in NeuroProtec is rutin. Rutin is quercetin with a sugar attached to it. We call that a glycoside. That keeps the gut enzymes busy because it is broken down in the gut and then it's released in the gut. So at least for people or children that have gut problems, that would be quite helpful in them because it stays primarily in the gut to allow luteolin to escape. Mind you, all of that is an approximation. It's very difficult to indicate how much of luteolin will get into the brain. Mm-hmm. In mice, we can do that because we can do exactly what I said.
And
we can sacrifice the mice, remove the brain, and then measure how much gets into the brain. Obviously, we cannot do it in humans.
So practically speaking,
but
are there any...
Kind,
practically speaking, are there any clinicals or at the very least observational studies that suggest that this has efficacy?
Right. First of all, so let me first say that there are two published clinical studies, but they are what we call open label, and I'll explain that in a second. Usually in medicine, as most of your listeners may know, we try to do what is called a double-blind randomized study. In other words, half the people take, let's say, a sugar pill or something inert in any way, and some take the study molecule, in this case, let's say, luteolin. And then you randomize them, meaning that the chance of one subject taking one or the other is basically random. It's a good design. It's the standard design. However, as I tell patients and families and colleagues many times, such studies in the autism population are extremely difficult, if not impossible, to do.
Sure.
For the following reasons. Number one, the autism is a spectrum to begin with. Some have few symptoms, some have a lot of symptoms. We used to call them Asperger's for low symptoms.
It's heterogeneous.
Autistic disorder for the,
it's right, a very,
very
diverse population.
But within that group, so that's one problem. The second problem is within the group, we have subgroups, some with allergies, some with gastrointestinal problems, some with seizures, some with mitochondrial problems. That complicates the process even more. And the third, in the United States, on average, a child on the spectrum takes 10 drugs, vitamins, supplements, etc.
Yeah.
And any time you do a study, you have to have what we call, excuse the expression, a naive population,
or a
virgin population. In other words, individuals that take no supplements, drugs, because all of those are likely to affect the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So it is extremely difficult to do a good study.
Mm.
So what happened was, we did one study in the United States, open label, that means that a number of children, in this case it was 45 children, took it, and we measured the difference at the beginning and at the end of 6 months. So there was no placebo, but we at least could see the difference from beginning to end. The other study, of which I was not an author, so there would not be conflicts of interest, was done in Greece, because in Greece, 90%+ of the children are on nothing, which is rather unfortunate there as well, but nevertheless. And therefore, we could have a population where we would not be confounding factors. To make it much easier to understand for your listeners, any time you have a subgroup, you have to literally double the number of patients. So let's say I start with mild autism and no other subgroup. I would need about 40 patients to do a study. 40 patients on placebo and 40 patients, let's say, on luteolin. The moment you have another subgroup, it has to go to 80. You have another subgroup, etc. So before you know it, you have to have 500 patients on each arm, which is almost impossible, both financially as well as practically.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, we have an application pending with the Department of Defense and another application pending with the National Institute of Health to do a double-blind randomized study, but we had to have very strict exclusion criteria, meaning we had to really come up with a very almost pure population of patients. We're waiting to hear, there will be sometime in November that we will listen. So we are trying hard, as I'm sure other colleagues are. We just have to realize that it is very difficult. The final point, and I know I'm tiring you and your listeners, is what we call the placebo effect.
Sure.
A study was published in a very good journal about 6 months ago showing that something had potential benefit. I don't want to go into the details.
Yeah.
But the placebo effect was only 3%. In general, in medicine, we don't believe anything in placebo that is actually less than 25%.
Exactly.
And in neuropsychiatric diseases, many publications indicate that the placebo effect can be as high as 40.
Exactly.
So when a study shows that there is a difference significant, if the placebo is 3%, it's almost meaningless.
Exactly.
Which adds another problem to how these studies can be done. Now, one very important subgroup of children on the spectrum is what we call pans or pandas. Those are children that have neuropsychiatric problems because they've been exposed, we thought originally,
to
a particular bug, strep. Now we think it might be staph, it might be Lyme, it might be viruses, etc. That's why the name was changed to PAN. Sudden neuropsychiatric problems without necessarily indicating a disease, I mean, a particular microorganism. For that, we helped and we designed another supplement that is available, which is called Brain Gain, because we kept choline, but we added, a natural molecule called berberine, and berberine is known to have antibacterial and antifungal properties, and in those children that belong to the pans or pandas category, we believe that that might be even better, even though there hasn't been a study done on that as of yet. There's one in the planning, but not that hasn't started yet.
I know there's a lot to talk about around this, but what other potential applications are there for luteal? And I know that actually it came to my attention because I treat a lot of patients with chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and there recently was a favorable write-up of your work in one of the blogs that is popular among fibromyalgia support groups.
My God, you've got to tell me what the blog was. I'm not even aware of it. Seriously, I'm not. Email it to me so I can look at it.
I'll let you know the other podcast.
Sure, thank you. One major, we don't know that we're treating a disease, but we definitely have evidence that we can reduce the symptoms. And what we have found over the years is patients that have diagnosis of the diseases we've been talking about complain of what they collectively call brain fog. This can be characterized by loss of shorter memory, not finding the right words at the right moment, not being able to multitask. And I've had many patients who have been colleagues, basically, who literally had to give up their profession because they just could not concentrate anymore. And in fact, in the New England Journal of Medicine review, even though the editors did not want us to use the term brain fog because it was sort of slogan, if you wish, they allowed us to explain this set of symptoms by describing the symptoms. And since then, there have been two publications, one in what is called Frontiers of Neuroscience, where we spoke about brain fog, and the words brain fog are in the title. And I sent you earlier today a paper of ours that was just published yesterday in the journal called Translational Psychiatry, which is published by the very well-known group Nature. The publisher is also the journal Nature, where we speak about atopic problems, inflammation of the brain, and autism, and we address some of the questions that you quite appropriately raised. So we have a lot of anecdotal evidence that at least the brain fog is reduced by taking luteolin. And in fact, for whatever it's worth, I've been taking 4 brain gain a day ever since I helped produce this. And I have to tell you, you know, I work like, you know, 18 hours a day and I keep on going. So
and
I really think
your productivity and creativity are astounding. You literally have a CV that's 60 pages long. So this luteolin, and I think this is something that, is going to show promise in a variety of inflammatory disorders. You mentioned psoriasis. You mentioned even potentially dementia, Alzheimer's. Perhaps there's some application to other neuroinflammatory disorders such as Parkinson's, even, dare we say, ALS, multiple chemical sensitivity. We hasten not to suggest that this is a panacea for diseases. There's no disease claim implicit in these statements. It's just that there may be pathways that may be inhibited or attenuated by these natural agents. We're not talking about a cure or a magic bullet, but something that could certainly slow the progression or potentially ameliorate these conditions.
Let me say the following two statements. Number one, we actually do have a target within the cells, both mast cells and microglial cells. The target is a little complicated. It's called mammalian target of rapamycin, or mTOR.
Mm-hmm.
It's involved in both proliferation of cells as well as activation and release of toxic molecules. This target has been studied very well in cancer, and in fact, luteolin, in combination with chemotherapeutic agents, has been shown in a number of studies to have very good beneficial effect against cancers, and Emory University is actually in the planning of a study combining basically quercetin and luteolin that we're preparing basically for them. They're waiting for funding for that.
And incidentally, when you talk about rapamycin is actually gaining a lot of traction as a candidate drug for anti-aging, perhaps the single most effective anti-aging medication, although it is a chemotherapy drug and toxicity may limit its utility.
You're right, and in fact, toxicity is very limiting. A company that used to be called Seaside Therapeutics in Massachusetts tried for 2 years to create new rapamycin analogs for the disease called tuberous sclerosis, 50% of which patients also have autism, and he failed miserably and went bankrupt.
Yeah.
So it's not an easy drug to use, and so far there haven't been good analogs. However, what we have tried to do is we try to find out molecules that might be even better than luteolin, even though they might be very difficult to purify. One such molecule, it's called tetramethoxyluteolin, because the 4-hydroxy groups that luteolin has are not there anymore, and they're methyl groups instead.
Okay.
So the methyl groups have 3 advantages. Number one, it makes the molecule to be more cell permeable and more likely to get into the brain, because the methyl groups can penetrate the lipid membranes of cells. Number two, about 30% of children on the spectrum cannot methylate and therefore have all kind of problems, and they need methyl groups. In this case, in fact, we give them glutathione for possible treatment, or S-adenosylmethionine, because we give the body methyl groups. In this case, methoxyluteolin will be giving methyl groups, and about 20% of the children cannot tolerate phenols. That's why there's also a Neuroprotect low phenol to help with those children,
right?
Because they lack an enzyme.
That is a phenomenon in autism, is that the phenolic sensitivity, and so I guess
very critical.
Yeah.
We didn't know this a few years ago, and children become very hyperactive. So I usually ask the families, if a child is hyperactive or they eat chocolate or berries, we already know they're going to have hyperactivity with phenolic compounds. But because this molecule is very difficult to isolate, the richest source is actually Tibetan ginger, if you can imagine.
Oh, wow.
We managed to get enough of this, and we put it into a skin lotion that is very hydrating, totally hypoallergenic, and this lotion is called Gentle Derm, and it will be available in 2 weeks on a gentlederm.com site.
Great. So for our listening audience,
that way we can
For our listening audience, give us some resources. What are some ways that people can find out more about this? Because we're obviously, you can take a deep dive into this subject, and there's more to learn. You have there is a website for Neuroprotect.
So the website where one can buy the supplements does not have any information, because we don't want to give the wrong impression that we're treating anything.
Right.
So the site where you can buy them is algonaut.com, A-L-G-O-N-O-T, or you can just go to amazon.com.
Okay.
Or in this case, to gentlederm.com. But where you can find information will be the following 3 sites. One is a non-profit site called autismfreebrain.org. There's another non-profit site that I helped develop called www.brain-gate.org. And then my university site, where everything that we've talked about and publications are free to download, which is a longer name, unfortunately, must sell, M-A-S-T, sell, C-E-L-L, master, M-A-S-T-E-R.com. So must sell master.com. And the new site, Gentle Derm, that will be live in about 2 weeks, will have a lot of information on luteolin, not only because of the skin lotion, but in general, along the lines of your questioning today.
Well, great. Listen, I have to give you great compliments on the creative synthesis that you've made between basic science and the nutraceutical world, because, you know, clearly we're always in the pharmaceutical industry looking for magic bullet targeted molecular therapies, but nature may provide us with some of the answers to some of these critical problems in lieu of designer molecules. So luteolin, I think, is going to be gaining some traction. More and more people, I think, may learn about it and utilize it for support. And we want to get the word out to our audience here on Intelligent Medicine.
Thank you very much. Maybe close by saying that in the last 2 years, the United States Patent Office has awarded 3 patents to me on the diagnosis and possible treatment of autism. So at least we have some support from the Patent Office that might help us get very much needed research funding to continue this work.
And that's another aspect of your work, is to develop more accurate ways of forecasting and diagnosing autism, which often is diagnosed only after the behavioral manifestations appear.
Correct.
And maybe a blood test or some sort of biological test may be the offing, and that's something you're working on as well.
Correct.
Great stuff. Thank you so much, Dr. Theodorides.
Thank you very much for giving me this chance.
My pleasure. Dr. Theodorides. And you can look him up under Dr. T.C. Theodorides, or go to the website mastcellmaster.com. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thanks for joining us.